Welcome to Base by Base, the podcast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine your DNA sequence, that familiar ATCG code, as the ultimate genetic blueprint. Now, what if I told you there's an entire secret layer of information on top of that blueprint?
Like hidden instructions.
Exactly. A system of subtle chemical tags. They don't change the letters themselves, but they powerfully dictate how those genes are read.
Yeah, so influencing things like cell identity, aging.
Everything from the identity of your cells to how you age, and even signaling disease. We're talking about DNA modifications, these dynamic annotations on the blueprint.
Right, turning genes up or down. Like dimmer switches, maybe?
Dimmer switches, or maybe sticky notes saying read this or ignore this. Now, for a long time, science mostly focused on just one key player here, 5-methylcytosine or 5-MeLaCy.
Yeah, 5-MeLaCy was the big one.
But recent work has unveiled a much richer picture, a more complex ternary code.
Ternary, meaning three parts.
Yes, involving not just 5-MeLaCy, but also its close cousin, 5-hydroxymethylcytosine. That's 5-8-MeLaCy. And of course, the original unmodified cytosine.
Okay, so C5MC and 5-HMC. That is more complex.
It is. And here's the critical challenge. Studying all three comprehensively across large human populations, it's been incredibly difficult. Often too expensive or just too complex technically.
Yeah, the tools just weren't quite there for that kind of scale, especially distinguishing 5-MeLaCy and 5-HMC reliably in big groups.
But what if a revolutionary new tool could finally unlock this complex biological layer at, well, an unprecedented scale, fundamentally changing how we understand human traits and diseases?
That'd be huge.
We're about to dive into exactly that. Today, we celebrate the pioneering work of David C. Goldberg, Cameron Cloud, Salmo Lee, Rishi Parecha, Nicole Renke, and Wanding Zhu, and their colleagues.
Ah, from the Center for Computational and Genomic Medicine at CHOP Illumina and Penn Medicine, right?
That's them. Their research has significantly advanced our understanding of scalable DNA methylation dynamics associated with human traits. So, before we get into their breakthrough, let's quickly ground ourselves. Why are these DNA modifications just so crucial?
Well, you kind of nailed it earlier. They're the annotations on the blueprint. These dynamic patterns, they're critical for regulating which genes are active, which aren't.
Gene expression control, basically.
Right. And maintaining the stability of our genome, guiding development. It's fundamental biology.
And beyond the fundamentals, they're becoming really vital biomarkers, aren't they?
Absolutely. We're seeing them used everywhere. Mm. Classifying cancers, diagnosing rare diseases.
Even assessing disease risk.
Exactly. It's a rapidly growing field. And this is where epigenome-wide association studies, or EVRS, come in.
EWIS. Right. Trying to link modifications to traits.
Precisely. Their goal is to find those connections between DNA modifications and human traits, behaviors, diseases, across vast populations.
Yep.
But historically, the best methods, like whole genome methylation sequencing.
Super detailed, but
incredibly costly and technically demanding, especially at the single cell level. They just weren't practical for the really large population studies you need to understand complex traits, you know, the interplay of genes and environment.
So people used arrays instead, like the Infinium bead chip.
Yeah, those array technologies have been the workhorses for large-scale studies. They're robust, easier to use, but they have limitations.
What kind of limitations?
Well, they rely on fixed probes. These are small DNA sequences designed to detect modifications only at specific spots, CBG sites usually.
So they only look where they're told to look.
Pretty much. And if new important sites are discovered later, or if you want to really study less common marks like 5-HMLC in detail, these older arrays just can't see them.
Meaning they couldn't fully capture that whole ternary code picture we talked about, the C, 5-LEMC, and 5-HMC.
Exactly. They mostly gave you a combined signal or just focused on 5-MC.
Okay, so how do you overcome those limitations? This deep dive centers on a really significant innovation, the development of the methylation screening array, or MSA.
The MSA.
Think of it not just as an upgrade, but maybe a strategic shift in how we approach methylation profiling, specifically designed for scalable screening across diverse human populations.
It's about getting smarter data, not just more data.
More targeted, more relevant data for more people, more efficiently. So how does it work?
Well, this new MSA, it really is a game changer because of its intelligent systematic design. It's quite clever.
How so?
Instead of just aiming for broad genome-wide coverage, hoping to find something, the MSA strategically focuses its probes. It concentrates them on regions already known from previous studies to be strongly associated with diverse human traits.
Ah, so it leverages existing knowledge.
Big time. We're talking about targeting nearly triple the trait associations per site compared to older arrays.
Mm-hmm.
Something like 5.6 associations per site versus maybe 2.2 previously.
Wow, that's a big jump in focus.
It is. And it also specifically hones in on methylation variations linked to cell identity. Adds another 48 cell type contrasts. The researchers really dug through existing whole genome data to pinpoint these high confidence, dynamic, cell type specific sites. Places that matter biologically.
So we're not just getting more data points, we're getting smarter data points. Points directly relevant to traits and diseases.
Precisely.
That sounds incredibly efficient. But it's not just what it targets, right? It's also about how it processes the samples.
Absolutely. That's the other key part. What truly makes this a leap forward is the platform itself. It's built on a novel 48-sample format.
48 samples at once.
Yeah, which translates into ultra-high sample throughput. And, crucially, at a significantly lower cost per sample, all while screening for even more traits per probe.
So faster, cheaper, and more targeted, that really opens the door for larger studies.
It dramatically increases the scale. And here's the really clever part chemically. They've made it compatible with a specialized protocol. It's called bisulfite, abobec-coupled epigenetic sequencing, or BACE-seq for short.
BACE-seq. What does that let them do?
It lets them profile the entire ternary code. Not just the total modification signal, but to precisely distinguish 5-milliC from 5-NSE, and both from unmodified cytosine.
How? How does it distinguish them?
It's almost like using two different chemical reactions or filters. One enzyme involved modifies 5-milliC, but not 5-NSMC. So by comparing the results from slightly different treatments,
you can subtract and figure out what's what.
Exactly. You get a clear picture. This much is C, this much is 5-milliC, this much is 5-NSC at that specific site.
Okay, that is clever. Getting a clear, unconfused picture of each player. And I assume they had to test this new array pretty rigorously and make sure it works.
Oh, absolutely. They rigorously benchmarked the MSA, showed high reproducibility, high accuracy against the gold standard sequencing methods.
So it's reliable for big studies.
Definitely. Confirmed its robustness. Even though it has fewer probes overall than some older, broader arrays, it still performed well for things like epigenetic clocks.
Epigenetic clocks. We'll come back to those.
We will. And they even showed you could accurately impute or predict the status of some missing probes based on the ones measured, showing compatibility with older data and models. It consistently produced reliable measurements.
Okay, so armed with this powerful, efficient, and accurate new tool, the research team then set out to create this big atlas of human tissue methylation. What did they find? What jumped out first?
Well, just the scale of the atlas itself was impressive. They profiled 117 methylomes. That's the complete set of methylations from 25 diverse human tissue types.
Yeah.
Plus various immune cells.
A real cross-section of the body.
Exactly. And immediately they saw this clear colocalization. Related cell and tissue types clustered together based purely on their methylation patterns.
So heart samples looked like heart samples. Brain looked like brain.
Right. It confirmed the array's ability to capture these fundamental biological distinctions. But they took it a step further.
Okay.
They showed the MSA can accurately deconvolute bulk tissue methylomes.
Deconvolute, meaning break them down.
Yeah. Figure out the mix of cell types present in a complex tissue sample. For instance, heart samples were correctly predicted to contain cardiomyocytes and fibroblasts, the main cell types.
The liver.
Dominated by hepatocytes, as you'd expect. Immune organs like the spleen showed the right mixes of monocytes, T cells, B cells.
So this raises a really interesting question, doesn't it? If you can accurately tell the cell composition from just a bulk tissue sample, what does that mean for diagnostics, for diseases where the mix of cells changes?
It's huge. It means we can look beyond just the overall tissue average and understand the cellular landscape within it. We could potentially spot subtle shifts in cell populations that signal early disease or track how treatments affect specific cells.
A much more granular view. Okay, let's talk about 5-HMOC. You mentioned it was trickier to profile before. What did they discover about its global patterns using the MSA?
Right. 5-HMOC has been more elusive. What they found was fascinating. Global 5-HMOC levels are anti-correlated with how fast tissues proliferate, how quickly their cells divide.
Anti-correlated. So less 5-HMOC in faster dividing tissues?
Exactly. It's most abundant in places like the brain, central nervous system tissues. Then kidney, heart, liver. And it's lowest in rapidly dividing tissues like the colon or lymph nodes.
Does that make biological sense?
It does, actually, because 5-HMSC isn't directly copied when a cell divides. So in rapidly proliferating cells, the mark essentially gets diluted out with each division.
Ah, okay. And does 5-HMSC just follow 5-HSC around, or does it have its own pattern?
That's a key question. They often occupy overlapping regions in the genome, but they definitely have distinct patterns too. For example, 5-HMSC tends to cluster more at enhancers.
Enhancers. Those are the regions that boost gene activity, right? Like volume knobs.
Precisely. While 5-MERC is often found in heterochromatin, the tightly packed, generally silenced parts of the genome.
So different genomic neighborhoods.
Right. And they also found evidence supporting the idea that 5-MERC is actually the substrate for making 5-MERC. As 5-MERC levels went up, the ratio of 5-MERC to plain C also tended to rise. They're interconnected, but distinct.
Interconnected but distinct roles. So if 5-MERC is enriched at enhancers, these gene-boosting regions, does that tie into tissue identity, making tissues unique?
That seems to be a major part of his job. They looked specifically at how 5-MERC defines tissue identity and found thousands of tissue-specific 5-MERC site sites.
And what characterized those sites?
Primarily elevated 5-MERC levels in the target tissue compared to all the others. A specific tissue would have high 5-MERC at certain spots, making it distinct.
And here's the kicker, right? How does this relate to gene expression? 5-MERC often silences genes.
Exactly. But with 5-MERC, they observed an almost exclusively positive correlation. When 5-MERC levels went up at these tissue-specific sites, the expression of nearby genes also tended to go up.
Wow, so 5-MERC often correlates with off, but 5-MERC correlates with on, especially for tissue-specific genes.
That's what the data strongly suggests. It points to 5-MERC playing this really crucial complementary role to 5-MERC in regulating tissue-specific gene expression and defining what makes a cell, say, a liver cell versus a neuron.
That's a fundamental insight. What about other factors like aging or sex differences? Did the MSA shed light there?
It did. They found widespread age-associated methylation changes, which we knew happened. But here's the twist. Some of what looked like age-related hypermethylation and increase in methylation was actually 5-MERC accumulating.
So the methylation increase wasn't just 5-MERC, it was also 5-MERC going up with age.
In many cases, yes.
Yeah.
And get this, epigenetic clocks.
Ah, yes, the clocks that predict age from DNA methylation.
Those clocks often rely heavily on these sites where 5-MERC increases with age. In fact, they found that 5-MERC profiles alone could predict chronological age with accuracy comparable to using 5-MERC profiles.
No way. Just the 5-MERC pattern predicts your age.
Pretty accurately, yes. It implies 5-LRC dynamics are deeply intertwined with the aging process. A whole new layer to explore there.
That's incredible. And sex differences.
They also identified thousands of sex-associated patterns for both 5-LSC and 5-ABLC. And interestingly, not just on the X chromosome, but on autosomal chromosomes too.
So differences between males and females written into the epigenome beyond the sex chromosomes themselves.
Exactly. Opening up new research avenues into subtle but potentially important sex-specific biology.
Okay, one last key finding area, the trait associations. The MSA was specifically designed to target trait-linked regions. Did that pay off?
It absolutely did. Yeah. This is where the practical power really comes through. They found a striking correspondence between a trait's known tissue context and where the methylation changes were happening.
Give me an example.
Okay, so for CpG sites associated with Alzheimer's disease risk, the most extreme methylation changes were seen, where you'd expect, in brain tissues.
Makes sense.
For inflammatory bowel disease risk sites. The biggest changes were in colon and small intestinal tissues.
Right. The tissue most relevant to the disease showed the strongest epigenetic signal at those risk locations.
Precisely. It really underscores how critical tissue context is in these studies. You can't just look at blood methylation and expect to understand a brain disease fully.
A crucial point for designing future studies.
Definitely. And they also showed a link to genetics. Genetic variants found in GWS genome-wide association studies often co-localized with the methylation signatures of the relevant tissue type. Like blood glucose variants mapping near methylation patterns specific to pancreatic cells.
So it connects genetic risk to epigenetic function in the right tissue. What does this mean for understanding complex diseases overall?
It means we're getting much closer to pinpointing the specific molecular events in specific cells and tissues where genetic risk factors actually exert their effects and contribute to disease. It bridges genetics and epigenetics in a very tangible way.
So let's pull back a bit. What does all this mean for the future? For genomics, for medicine? This feels like more than just a new tool.
It really is a shift. The MSA provides this balanced approach, right? It prioritizes the probes linked to known traits, to predictive models, making the data highly relevant from the get-go.
And the scalability is key.
Absolutely. Especially because, historically, many large genomic studies, including EWES, have overrepresented populations of European descent.
A big problem for generalizability.
A huge problem. The MSA's scalability and lower cost should make it feasible to re-examine these trait associations in much larger and, crucially, more diverse cohorts. That will help us understand the interplay of genetics, environment, and epigenetics across all populations. It's vital for equitable research.
So bridging gaps in representation, but also bridging gaps between different types of studies.
Exactly. It kind of bridges the gap between the super detailed, expensive single-cell methylome profiling and the need for cost-effective population screening. And remember the deconvolution.
Being able to see the cell mix in a bulk tissue.
Right. It dramatically enhances our ability to do that. We can study those subtle shifts in cell populations within a tissue, which might be critical early signs or drivers of complex diseases. We get more granular insights from readily available samples.
And that deeper understanding of 5-MeLa-C you've been highlighting, what are the implications there?
That's a major implication, I think. Realizing its distinct complementary role to 5-MeLa-C's in cell identity, gene regulation, aging, it just opens up so many new avenues.
For biomarkers, therapeutics.
Potentially both. Understanding how 5-MeLa-C dynamics contribute to epigenetic clocks, for instance, could lead to much more refined predictors of biological aging, maybe even disease progression. Could we eventually target these pathways to promote healthier aging? It's speculative, but the door is open.
It's like finding a whole new set of dials and readouts on the biological control panel.
That's a good way to put it. A previously fuzzy part of the panel is now coming into focus.
Now, of course, no study is perfect. The authors themselves pointed out some limitations, right?
Yes, they were clear about that. Their initial application, the Atlas study, had somewhat limited metadata for fully validating all the trait-associated probes they included on the array.
So more validation needed as it's used more widely.
Right. And naturally, applying this to even larger cohorts in the future will likely uncover even more subtle epigenomic dynamics.
And linking it directly to gene expression.
That's another key next step. Mm-hmm. Generating data sets where you have the MSA's ternary code methylation data and matched gene expression data from the same samples. That would allow direct, powerful comparisons of how 5-MeLa-C and 5-natal-C specifically influence gene activity levels.
So a fantastic start, laying crucial groundwork, but still lots more to explore.
Always in science.
Okay, let's try to summarize the core message here. The new methylation screening array, the MSA, is really a significant leap forward. It offers a scalable, accurate way to profile that complex ternary code C5-NLC and 5-NLC in large human populations.
Right. Scalable and discerning.
And crucially, it reveals the previously underappreciated yet vital roles for 5-hydroxymethylcytosine, 5-HEFC, defining tissue identity, regulating genes, influencing epigenetic aging, complementing what we knew about 5-HEC.
Showing 5-HEC isn't just a bystander, it's an active player.
Absolutely. This deep dive into the epigenome offers powerful new insights into health and disease, really highlighting that critical tissue-specific context for everything from Alzheimer's to aging.
Context is key.
This episode was based on an open access article under a CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. Considering the profound impact of these subtle epigenetic marks on everything from aging to disease, what new frontiers could be unlocked by truly understanding the dynamic interplay of this ternary code in every cell of your body?